Hi, everyone, and welcome back to OTTB on Tap. I'm Neve.
And I'm Emily. Hey, Neve, what's on tap today?
We're back with another Spotlight episode in our RRP Trainer series, and this one's a real treat. Today, we're joined by Amanda Chance, an adult amateur eventer, longtime thoroughbred fan, and sport horse breeder who's making her RRP debut this year with a true war horse. Amanda, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's start with the basics. Can you give us a quick horse life origin story? How did you first get started in riding?
Quick. Okay.
I'm laughing because I already know.
I already know. You're like, this girl has a lot of words. I'll try to, my job is literally words, so give me a break. I'll try to abbreviate a little bit. So my origin story, way back in the day, like a really long time ago though, for real. So I don't know if any of y'all were in Girl Scouts, but if you were,
yeah, I was for sure. Time.
Yes. You had a horse badge. It was a gateway drug. That was a dangerous bet because I loved horses. Like, little girls just love horses, I guess, at least us, whatever's wrong with our brain chemistry. So I'd always had My Little Ponies and stuff, but no one had put me on a horse. And that act was literally just the beginning of the end for my parents, really. We got our horse badge trail riding somewhere. I was in Arkansas at the time when I was a kid. And then I just wouldn't shut up. Like, I wouldn't shut up. And I basically badgered them into taking me to lessons, weekly lessons. There was this farm. We lived in Little Rock. This farm called Shadowcroft in Roland, which was near this mountain in Little Rock. All I remember was driving there all the time. And I rode whatever. I fell off a lot. There was one lesson where this horse would just trot to the corner and abruptly stop, and I would fall off every time. So every corner is just plop, there she goes. On again. To the next corner, plop, there she goes. It didn't bother me. I was like, oh no, back on. I was just really happy to be there on a horse. It couldn't be bad. And then we moved to Texas, and my parents saw an opportunity here. They were like, if you find somewhere that'll give you lessons and you set everything up, we'll take you. I'm 12 years old, right?
This is a mistake.
Here, it's like 1990, I don't want to tell you, late 90s, with a phone book, like Yellow Pages. And I just go to like stables.
Yeah.
And I just start going down the list, calling. And I'm very introverted. I don't like making phone calls now as an adult. So that tells you how motivated I was. Yeah, I just started going down the list. And finally, this farm called Kingsbridge returned my phone call because obviously no one answers. Obviously not. They returned my phone call, which is, Lord only knows what I left on that message. Like, I was awkward as hell. I cringe to even think. But I started riding there. I took summer camp, and then I started riding all the time. And then I was like full-time barn rat. I was there 6 days a week. I tacked up lesson horses. I turned horses out. I tacked horses up. Anything for the chance to ride. I would ride whatever. I didn't care. And I got known as the kid who didn't care. So sometimes I rode some really not great or polite horses.
Yeah. But
it didn't bother me. I was just happy to be on a horse. So I rode there through high school. I ended up getting my first horse from that trainer, wildly inappropriate horse for me at the time. He just ran away with me all the time. I did the jumpers on him and I couldn't stop him at the end of the course unless I ran him into the fence.
Oh my God.
It's horrifying. And he roared like a freight train. So you could just hear this, especially in a covered arena. It's just like, there I am just running into the freaking arena fence. But I was delighted. It was my first horse. He was big. He was a thoroughbred. He was a 17 hand long thoroughbred. I just loved the hell out of that horse. And then I took him with me to the East Coast to be a working student because I didn't think college was for me at the time. So I did what everyone does and I went to be a working student. But at that time, and still now, what hunter jumper trainers have working students? It's not really a thing.
Yeah.
So that's how I started eventing. There were really only eventing trainers. So I went east and was a working student for a little while, which I'd been a working student at the hunter jumper barn my whole teenage career anyways. So it's just a different sport in a different setting. And it was cold there. I don't know how you guys do that. That was horrible.
It sucks.
I didn't care for it at all. I came running home with my tail between my legs 2 weeks into real winter. I was like, that is not great. I was wearing all of my clothes at one point and I was still freezing.
Yeah.
It wasn't cute. And then I came home back to Texas and met up with this lady who was starting a breeding farm, and I ended up working for her breeding farm for a while, which did burn me out. I think that's pretty normal. Like an early 20s, 7 days a week horse girl, like you start to wonder if there's a little more to life than that, then maybe it's not 14 hours a day, 7 days a week. So I went to corporate world. I always kept riding. I always had horses. I had a lot of off the track thoroughbreds. I bred my first horse myself when I was 22. I leased a thoroughbred mare and bred her to a warm blood stallion. And that was my first homebred. Raised her, showed her. I got married, got divorced. That wasn't for me. Leased Sadie out to somebody I met on Facebook who is now the owner of the farm I live at in Ocala. Just random things that happen. The horse I'm competing now is the son of that mare that I originally bred. So he's second generation. And then in that break that I took when I got divorced and leased Sadie out to this friend that I met, I lasted about 3 months before I started picking up a lot of weird hobbies. Because if all you've ever done is ride, and then you just come up with some weird shit. I was gluten-free baking and...
Amanda sounds like a combination of Emily and I. Truly, like all of these different ingredients. I'm like, this really sounds much of both of us.
It was bad. I took up triathlon, guys. Come on. I was so mentally unwell that I was working out 4 hours a day because I couldn't be alone with my thoughts, apparently, without a horse. Wow.
Yeah.
It was not a good time for me. So I lasted only a few months, and then a horse found me on Facebook, and it was cheap, and it was cute, and he jumped around a little bit in the hunters, but he'd gotten really fried really badly, and they turned him out in a field, and the lady was just trying to get rid of him. And she sent me this video of this fattest horse I've ever seen in my life, just trotting around a covered. And she was like, if you buy him today, I'll sell him to you for $900. And I was like, what could go wrong? Okay. Yeah. So my intention was to resell him. That was my whole goal, was to get my mare back after she was leased out for a while and keep showing her and then sell this horse. And that is not what happened. That horse took me on quite a journey. So I started blogging when I had him, and I ended up eventing him through preliminary level. He changed my life, that horse. He's an off-track thoroughbred. He never raced. He trained. He never raced. So whatever you want to call that. That was a long origin story.
That's okay.
Sorry.
So that kind of leads us into this, which is, for those that might not know who you are yet, you've got a really strong voice in the OTTB community. Can you tell us a little bit more about your blog and your podcast, Breed Ride Event?
Yeah, so that was also an accident. I'm just really not good at intentionally doing things, but I guess I have a strength for just following weird rabbit holes. I don't know, because everything good that's ever happened to me has not been by my intention. I've always liked to write. I took a lot of journalism and creative writing classes in school. It wasn't a career I followed, but I've always liked it. And at that time, Neve, you remember, you blogged a little bit. The blogs were popping at that time. That was like
blogs were the original podcast.
Yeah. Like 10, 12, 15 years ago, the blog scene was where it was at. And one of the girls that I rode with at the barn, she had a blog that was quite popular. And she was like, oh, you should blog. And I was like, meh, meh. And then I was like, it might be fun because like I'd just gotten Henry, the $900 Facebook horse that I bought randomly. I'll just do it a little and for my own enjoyment. And if I keep up with it, great. If I don't, who cares? Maybe I can just use that as a way to track his journey, his training. And that really went off the rails fast. What started very casual really took off because everything was so popular then that people were really insatiable for interesting stories or cool horses to follow or people that blogged regularly. So I was expecting to be speaking to the void when I started, and it was not like that at all. I got a lot of followers really fast, and Henry was an interesting horse to follow. And so I just started writing a lot, and that was 12 years ago. And it was originally called the $900 Facebook Pony because that was Henry. He's not a pony, but I called him a pony. It doesn't matter. And I just kept writing and writing, and I got a lot of joy out of it. I think many of you know that there are pros to sharing all of these things on the internet, and there are cons to sharing all these things on the internet. And I'm actually a really introverted, pretty private person. So I've had to learn how to balance that and sometimes you learn the hard way with repercussions of the things that you say on the internet. So it's a learning curve for sure. And there are days where I just wish I could delete everything and disappear and no one would know who I am. The tension between me and disappearing forever is quite high some days. But at the same time, I've gotten so many opportunities because of that and made so many connections like this. And yeah. The community that has come from it, it's interesting because like when I started, I was maybe 30, not quite 30. And I don't think I quite knew like just how important support and community can be. And then some things have happened that I have blogged about that have been really hard for me to blog about. I really struggled with Henry with my mental game, like the pressures of foreshowing and trying to get myself in a good headspace. I really struggled with that for a long time, and blogging about it helped me a lot. Just to get it out and put it on paper. And then when my current horse was born, he was really sick, and it was probably the most difficult 2 weeks of my life, to be honest with you. He was in the hospital. He had a 5% chance of making it. He was so sick. And to just sit there and watch him struggle was really hard. And the number of people that came forward from my blog to support me in that, and businesses that came forward to just offer their support, even just asking how he was or sending good wishes, it changed something in me fundamentally.
Yeah.
At that time, I didn't know how important that was. And then that happened. And I was like, this is actually so crucial to my development as a person and who I want to be and what I need to remember is important. So what started as a silly little blog really honestly changed my life significantly. And the position I'm in now, none of it would be possible if I hadn't started that blog. And it's morphed now. It was the $900 Facebook pony. And as Henry phased out of his career and Presto started to come to the forefront, I changed it to Breed Ride Event because I am quite involved in breeding now also. And when I started, I really didn't think I was going to event again. I thought he was going to be a jumper. So things have changed in 12 years, but it's been mostly good. And as blogging, it died off. I do think it's starting to have a little bit of a resurgence. I struggled with, do I continue it or do I just fall off? Most everybody else did.
Yeah.
And I ended up taking a middle ground. I used to blog 5 days a week, and that's an incredibly time intensive. When I worked a 9 to 5 and I had a lunch break and didn't start my day until 7 a.m., like that was a different story. Whereas now I have to hustle.
Yeah.
Every minute of the day is a hustle for me. So it started to be really hard to justify that. And so I started moving some of it behind the Patreon paywall. So now most of my videos are there. If I have lesson videos, show videos, I do hack chats where I'll just be hacking and just talk through updates. And my friend Hillary does it with me. And we just have a lot of content in there. And I was really hesitant about that at first, because I was like, I didn't know how I felt about it because I've always wanted to be accessible and open, but I also had to balance that with, I can't do this for free at this
point. For sure.
It's really, when it's that time intensive, it was a decision. And I was like, either I stop blogging or I put a lot behind a paywall. That was where I was at. And I still have my blog going and I post once or twice a week. You can still keep up with my horses.
I still read that.
Yeah, you can still keep up and know what you need to know. I don't share as much. There's not as many videos. Yeah. There's not as much, but I still try to. The people that can't afford to or don't want to for whatever reason, I totally respect that. I still try to keep enough content there that they feel like they know what's going on.
Yeah.
But it's been an interesting, sometimes I just stop and I'm like, how did that one little decision that I made sitting in the ring in the middle of a lesson with this girl being like, you should start a blog. I can vividly remember the conversation. I would never have guessed that.
Like
everything that I am and have now in my life that it is now is because of that one decision.
Yeah. It's amazing weird. How those things send stuff into the world. And we've experienced that now with the podcast to a certain degree and just some of the avenues and places it's taken us and people that we've met and
lives that we've touched, and we're just getting started. So it'll be really cool to see how we feel about this in another 5+ years.
There's a lot of power in putting things out in the universe. Mm-hmm. If you think it's stupid or you think no one will care, it's crazy how many people, just having somebody go, I felt that too.
Yeah.
It just makes such a big difference to everyone, you and them.
Yeah.
It's, I've learned more about myself than anything else from doing it, but it's incredible.
That's really cool. Before we dive into your RRP horse, we'd love to hear more about your current string. I know you have a broodmare, and your current competition horse have some similarities in their breeding, I believe. And so tell us a little bit about those guys.
So Presto is a second generation homebred. So he's my main competition horse. He's 8 this year.
I believe
it's crazy to me to think that I bred his dam is sitting out in the pasture here right now. She's 18 this year. And I'm like, how the hell did I get this old? That my first homebred is 18 years old. That's insane. It's crazy to me that Presto's 8.
Yeah.
What the hell? I was blogging for years before I even bred Presto. So everybody's been with him every step of the way, which is really cool because it feels like he belongs to a lot of people. But he's my main guy. Nicest horse I've ever had. Potentially the nicest horse I'll ever have, honestly. So he's interesting. He's a lot. He's obviously his dam line's thoroughbred because that was the mare I started with that I leased and then bred to this Hanoverian. And then his sire, Mighty Magic, is 88% thoroughbred. He's by Mitens out of a Baltic mare. So it's like European, but it's all originally from the U.S. because they just stole our horses. So he's 80% thoroughbred, and he's a cheeky little guy. He's not little. He's 17, too.
with a big white eye.
With the white eye. He looks like chaos, and he's not boring. I've never been bored a day in my life. He matches my chaotic energy. I think he's hilarious. Other people don't agree. My friend Hillary is horrified by him at all times. She's, it's just a lot. And I'm like, yeah, but it's funny. She's like, no, it really isn't. It's possible that I have created some of it. I'm willing to admit.
You certainly don't do anything to tamp it down.
I don't. I think it's so funny. I'm very entertained. He's got so much personality, and it's just, I don't know. The horses are meant to be fun, and I like for them to have personality and expression. And as long as he's not trying to kill me or be rude, be yourself, man, I don't care. So he's my main horse. We've done 2 preliminaries. We just moved up this season. He's still not challenged by that yet. He's still not paying attention. It's great. I'm paying attention. I'm terrified. He's over. So I have him. And then Henry is still ticking. He's 18 now, which is also crazy. He was 6 when I got him.
Wow.
When I started that blog, which is nuts. He's still sound. I evented him through preliminary. And at that point, there was no modified. I was in Area 5. I was in Texas. There was no modified. And I just thought preliminary was too much for him to stay sound. He's got kissing spine. He's got a spur in one knee. His legs go a lot of different directions. he's not built. Like, his neck comes out really low. He's downhill. He's short, fat, round, little meatball of a horse. You wouldn't look at him and go, yeah, I want to jump that thing around a preliminary.
Yeah.
He did it because I asked him to. That horse is all heart and all try. But we ran 4 or 5 preliminaries, and I was like, I just don't think he's going to stay sound if I keep asking this of him. And he didn't owe me shit at that point. I bought that horse to do 3-foot jumpers and sell him. And I never wanted to event above novice ever. I thought that looked stupid and terrifying. No. And it is stupid and terrifying. So he took me around preliminary and just was an absolute patron saint. I just think that's enough for him. I would like for him to be sound for a lot longer. And I thought I would get 1 or 2 seasons out of him, and I would probably, I don't think he would have thrived.
Yeah.
So I decided that was enough for him. And I literally jumped him this morning, and he freaking dragged me to an oxer, landed bucking, and like cackled.
I was going to say, he's still trying to buck you off every day. So.
Yes. He's going to go cross country schooling tomorrow for the first time in 6 months, and he's going to be absolutely feral. But that's what's great. That's why I wanted to quit with him when I did, is because I want him to be able to continue to do. He's a thoroughbred. He wants to work. He wants to have a job. He's very happy out here just dragging us around, being a complete turd. But he's also, he'll jump from anywhere you put him. He's got a smile on his face. He's just playing.
Yeah.
And I think that's great. And it worked out for me because I also have another horse I can work on the skills that I'm working on with Presto in my lessons. I can come home and have a practice horse. So
yeah,
it works really well.
Yeah.
And then Rubes is my RRP horse. So I've had him since July. And we can get into what he's doing later.
Yeah, actually about to just ask you about that.
I do have the brood mare. So I have...
Oh, yeah.
She's four. She's by a thoroughbred stallion, which you guys have probably, if you've looked at stallions at all, his name is Sacatini. So he's a Bernardini son. He's local here to Ocala. And she's out of a mare by Mighty Magic, which is the sire of Presto. And then the dam line is like Ramiro Hanoverian. And she got run into a fence when she was a yearling and chipped a little bit of her neck. Like she got a little bit of an injury in her neck and she's sound and she's fine, but she would probably develop neck arthritis having to actually do a job. So her owner very graciously offered her to me because she knew the breeding was up my alley. And
yeah,
Mighty Magics are chaotic. And if you don't like it and you're not prepared for them, they're not fun. She was like, I don't know if this one is one I want to keep, but would you be interested in? I was like, obviously, yes. Sign me up.
Some more to the chaos train.
It's a Mighty Magic thing, 100%. Good God. Sometimes they both look at me and I'm like, oh my God, it's the same look. They look really similar. They have very similar look. She's just 2 hands shorter than him for whatever reason. And she's got more warm blood. I don't know. Make it make sense. But so I have 4 currently.
Gotcha.
So did you breed her this year?
Yeah, so I own her in partnership with my friend Hillary, who I also do my Patreon with. She's my BFF. We just do everything together, basically. So I own her with Hillary, and we bred her to a stallion from the UK called Future Guilty Pleasure, who's competed through, I think, intermediate. He's with Alex Bragg right now. Okay. He's young. Really nice horse. Really cheeky. So this should be great.
Perfect.
We confirmed heartbeat last week, she's safely a month and a few days in full. And we'll probably sell that one. I think we're going to breed to sell the first few and then figure out if we want to keep any of them because we've got a lot of horses at the moment.
Yeah.
So.
Yes.
No.
They are multiplying fast, yes.
Let's talk about your makeover partner. What is his name and how did you find him and what made you say this is the one?
So he found me. I would like to point that out. There was an ad that was targeting me very specifically, looking for a specific kind of person for this horse that was very well known in Pennsylvania because he'd raced 100 times and he was known as just a do-gooder, tried really hard. He made everyone money that owned him, that horse. He was a high-end claimer. He did a lot of allowance races. He hit the board in 3 stakes races. This horse raced for 8 years. He did everything. He won a lot of money, raced 100 times, and he's been around a lot of barns. He's well-known, and a lot of people really loved him. So they wanted somebody that would keep him well-known, keep him in social media, give them lots of updates, and they specifically wanted somebody to name him for RRP. And I was like, I am an annoying person. I could definitely send you more updates than you could ever possibly want. I already have social media that's built in.
Yeah.
I want to go to RRP. What could go wrong?
Yeah.
He looked cute in his pictures. He looked like a sporty horse. The videos, his walk was what really grabbed me. He walked like an athlete.
Yeah.
You know what? When you see one, you're like, that horse looks like an athlete. He raced forever and won almost $1 million. He still looked in really good condition. His legs were pretty clean. Everyone that's seen him, they're like, he raced how many times?
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, I know.
I remember his ad. I saw his ad and I was like, ooh. I was like, I do not need a horse.
I didn't need another horse. I didn't either, but crimes were committed. And I just, I don't know. I don't have a good... If something comes at me, I don't have the ability to say no. And that horse came at me. I feel like he came for me.
Yeah.
And once I talked to the trainer, we were talking on the phone like we were old friends.
Yeah.
She called me and we chatted about him and racehorses and event horses and life and ramen and how much we have to eat because we're poor and all of these things. And by the end of it, she was like, I feel like you're his person.
Yeah.
And she talked to the owner who was his breeder at the time. He'd gotten him back. He'd been claimed several times. It was Donnie Brown.
Yeah.
He got him back and he was the one facilitating finding the right person. And Cassie and Donnie, they were both really great. And they were like, how do we get this horse to you? And I was like, I have this many dollars. How do we get him here for this many dollars? Yeah. So Donnie was flexible on the price. Cassie knew a guy that was bringing a load down anyway. He got to jump on there for a really good fill rate. Yeah. And he was here literally less than 48 hours later.
That's awesome.
And I was like,
we're doing it.
I did that. But how do you not? Just a horse like that is so cool. He raced 100 times. If you look at his record, his longest break was 4 months.
That's wild. Like,
insane to me.
Yeah.
It's insane to me. He's in the Pennsylvania Hall of Fame now.
Yeah.
And the people around him just really cared about him. Everybody that had the horse really cared about him. Multiple people reached out to me after he got here and they were like, that horse was in my barn for 6 months, a year, or whatever.
I love that.
And like, he was a workhorse. He showed up, he made my owner's money, he made me money. He never put a foot wrong. Like, that's...
Did you say his name? I don't think you did.
Ruby Blue.
Ruby
Blue. Ruby Blue.
So people can look him up if they want to.
Yeah. B-L-E-U. Blue. Blue. Blue.
Perfect.
Yes.
So what's it been like restarting a horse with that many miles under his belt? Is it different than a lightly raced horse, or how'd that go?
For him, yes. I will say he's not the first war horse I've had. The horse that I found for RRP last year that I ended up selling way before RRP, he was really close to a war horse, like a couple races off, and he was 7, turning 8 when I got him. So similar situation, but these two horses really, temperament-wise, couldn't be more different.
And you also had to let Ruby sit untouched for 6 months, which was probably incredibly difficult.
So getting one in July, first of all, bringing a horse from Pennsylvania to Ocala in July is borderline cruelty.
It really is.
It was not nice. And I asked Cassie when we were talking about 17 times, like, he sweats well, right? Like, the good sweater. So he sweats, right? She was like, this woman is crazy.
I need to see pictures of him sweaty.
I was like, but he sweats. And she was like, yes.
Okay.
Because if they get down here and don't sweat, I'd have to send them back. There's just no,
it's
hot, it's humid. I can't do anything about that. He did need a break. The horse genuinely needed a break. He'd been racing for 8 straight years. But him genuinely needing a break and convincing him that he needed a break were two very different things.
You guys sound similar, to be honest.
Yeah. I don't have much chill either, neither does he. And I felt bad for him because he got on a trailer, rode probably the farthest he's ever ridden, showed up in this hellscape of humidity in July. A hurricane came like a week later. Like, it was just...
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
I felt horrible. And he didn't like not having it. He was like, you do not know what you're doing. It is 6 a.m. What the hell? And he would run himself around his turnout because he was like, I guess you're just not going to train me. A horse doesn't race that long that successfully without knowing his job.
Yeah.
And
right.
Liking a routine and liking a job and convincing him that he could probably just take a deep breath and chill. It took about 6 months, no joke. The transition was difficult, but not for bad reasons. Not because he's bad, not because he's naughty, just because he's almost tries too hard.
Yeah.
And he wants too much to do work. So getting him here in July, and I couldn't do anything with him for months besides a little bit of groundwork and trying to get him to take a deep breath, was not the most fair situation. So it's been different just because his work ethic is so high and he's very serious and he thinks he knows everything. And trying to convince him that this job is different and he needs to maybe take some few minutes to listen to my input, he's like, but you don't know what you're doing. Like, you're doing wrong. So that's been the hardest part of him, is he's just a professional.
Yeah.
He's a pro and he knows how to do the one job that he did really well. And now I've changed all of the rules. Every single rule that he knew, I changed every single one. And that's hard. That's a big ask from a 10-year-old horse.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not impossible. He's got a great temperament. He wants to work. That's 99% of it. It's just channeling that.
Yeah. And then once you got him going under saddle in December, how did your opinion of him evolve and change the way that you started to move forward with him?
We spent the first few months addressing his body and all of, he was very well taken care of on the Trek. I have to say that immediately. All of his connections really took care of that horse. Clearly, obviously. Yeah. He made it as far as he did with clean legs. He was very well taken care of, but he had a job where he ran this direction, and that's his job, and he ran a lot, and he ran fast. And that takes a toll on his body, obviously. So the first few months were just trying to get his muscles to loosen up and figure out if he needed any help anywhere, maintenance wise, and get him to understand that he could move his body different directions. Because yes. He knew how to put it in one place and go really fast that direction. But getting him to be like, you can bend this way, you can bend that way, your hind end can be independent. And he was like, what? He really was just like, what the hell? And making it physically possible was thing number one. And then making it mentally possible was thing number two. So we did a lot before I ever really got on him. We had done a lot to address chiropractic, body, feet. His bringing a horse to Florida in July is just asking. Oh my God. It's just wet. Yeah. It's wet here. We're on sand. So if, as long as you want a very wet foot with no sole, you're in the right spot. So his feet, he'd been in stalls for 8 years. So naturally his feet get here and just fall apart. Yeah. I can't even keep my horse's feet together very well that have been here forever. It's a struggle. So that's not on him at all. It's just Florida. So we had to do some stuff with his feet, and so it was quite a bit. And he was always very willing. He's very smart. He's very willing to learn. And by the time I got on him, I knew we had addressed some of the physical things. And then I got on him and I felt a couple of other things. And I was like, I feel like we have more to do to get his body where I felt like it needed to be, which is normal post-track aftercare. Yep. And a little extra for him because he's a little older and did a little bit more. I've done more aftercare on 4-year-olds, to be fair. But he was always very willing to learn. He's very eager. He's a little over eager. All the good ones are, right? But he's a worker bee. He's a worker bee.
It sounds like maybe it was good that you did get him a little bit early to help train, give him that extra time for the transition.
I wish it hadn't been July.
Yeah.
The worst.
Maybe October would have been better.
The worst part. Florida in July, there's not much worse than that. The mosquitoes were huge. There were hurricanes. We had literally 3 hurricanes in the first 2 months he was here. I was like, sorry. His feet fell apart because it's so wet. And I was just like, oh my God. He hates mosquitoes. It took a while to understand turnout. If there was a mosquito in turnout, he lost it. Oh God. He lost it entirely. I had to bring him inside. He couldn't cope. If he heard a mosquito, he would just start running.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I have bad news. The mosquitoes are here till November. So the first few months were hard. And it's just because he was very used to one life and it was a really great life. And I was like, I'm going to do my best, but I can't control the mosquitoes, the hurricanes, the heat, the humidity. And he was like, I'm not sure if I like this.
Do you have any tips for transitioning feet the Florida?
Unfortunately, if you just chuck him out, you're not going to have a foot. They just can't be chucked outside. He had to come in. He came in every evening. I basically left him out until the mosquitoes started, which is 5 or 6. And then I would bring him in and cover him head to toe in 4 different kinds of bug spray, literally, and his fly sheet. And he still was not happy. And he stayed in until the next morning. I would try to let the dew. We have very heavy dew in the summer. So I'd try to let some of the dew burn off, but he sometimes couldn't quite make it that long. So I had to ease him into turnout. He had to spend some time inside to let his feet dry and to be away from the mosquitoes.
Yeah.
As much as I would love to say, chuck them all out. That's just not realistic for some of them. And it's not to their benefit all the time.
Yeah. And the environment and the climate really do play a huge role in that as well.
It's not to his benefit to be standing in wet 24/7, especially if he's getting eaten alive by mosquitoes and running in panic away from them. It was the first few months I was like, I feel terrible that I've done this to this horse. He's fine now, but the first few months he was like, what the hell?
As someone who breeds sport horses, I'm curious of how your background as a breeder has influenced the way that you evaluate off-the-track thoroughbreds.
I think for me, the benefit is that when I learned about conformation, I learned about it from a functionality in a sport horse perspective. All of the various things I've been involved in with breed registries and seminars and young event horse and all of this breeding related stuff, my eye for confirmation developed looking at horses from that lens, which is of great benefit. It's still not the same, obviously, if you're looking at warmbloods and now you have to apply it to a thoroughbred. And especially when it's still on the track, you have to see through things, how they're stood, how they're muscled, how they're not muscled, how they have weight, how they don't have weight. So you do have to tweak your eye, but the bone structure is there and the bone structure is the same. And the bone structure you're looking for certain jobs is the same. So to me, it was of great benefit because I didn't grow up necessarily learning about conformation. I grew up in a horse show barn, but getting involved in breeding as early as I did, I was like 20, and learning all of that over the last two decades, my eye has developed from the sport horse lens.
Yeah. Are there certain traits or types that you find yourself drawn to that maybe others might overlook, or what stands out to you?
I have a type for sure.
It's called chaotic.
It's not everyone's cup of tea, but I do have a type.
Yeah.
I like them a little bit long. I like a little bit more neck. I would rather have more back than a shorter. I jump things, right? If I was a dressage person, this would be very different. But as someone who wants to run and jump, I want them a little longer rather than shorter. My personal preference. I like long legs. I like a longer neck. I like a long humerus with a good slope to it, because I think that's very indicative of stride length and jumping technique. So I always look for that. But I just really, I like a more long-lined, long-limbed type of creature. And I would prefer a little bit taller to a little bit shorter, just because I feel more comfortable with more horse in front of me. I prefer to ride the horse up in front of me. That's my type.
So we have to fight over them, basically.
Yeah, I was going to say, you two have the same type. She would have loved Alex, probably.
Honestly, my Presto horse is like, he's a little too tall. If he was 16'3". But physically, that horse is really close to my ideal type, and he's long.
Very cool.
Would you ever consider using a thoroughbred, your RRP horse, in a breeding program if it were a mare? And do you see value in them as far as like sport partners?
Yeah, so this is a great question. So obviously, Presto is from originally an off-the-track thoroughbred mare. I leased the mare. Bred to a stallion, got Sadie. Bred Sadie to Mighty Magic, got Presto. So the dam line is off the track thoroughbred. That's where I started, was with that thoroughbred mare. Some of the best, most successful event breeders in this country started the same way, with a good thoroughbred mare. A good thoroughbred mare, you can breed to a good jumping stallion and you're going to get a good horse. It's going to be sporty. The thoroughbred just brings work ethic. It brings class. It brings athleticism. I think mixing a thoroughbred mare with a warmblood is just, to me, perfection. For an event horse, my perspective would change depending on, if you want a jumper or a dressage horse, it might be a little different. Yeah. But I don't think for an event horse that there is a better match, mix of bloodlines. Yeah. And as sport partners, obviously, I think all of the best event horses have thoroughbred. Usually thoroughbred dam line. The Germans always say you put the blood on the top. They did that to preserve the type of the mare. So they kept the type of the warm blood mare. They just put more blood on it from the top. That's what the Germans were going for with that, breeding their jumpers and their dressage horses. That makes sense. But if you're coming at it from the event horse perspective, the blood on the bottom has actually proven to be more successful than the blood on the top. And it's because they tend to take more from the type of the dam. So if you have the thoroughbred type coming through more heavily and you're putting the elasticity and the power of the warm blood onto that thoroughbred type, how could you ask for a better event horse than that?
Yeah.
So to me, the thoroughbred mare is the key to breeding a good
horse. We're going to have you back on for a way more detailed deep dive into this because it would just be so fun.
I will tell you, I am in the process of creating my next one. My friend Hillary, she has a mare that she bought to do RRP, ended up not taking her to RRP. She just had her first foal that is Hillary's. I'm going to breed her this year to a Holsteiner stallion. So she's by Majestic Warrior out of a Brahms mare. big, I'm gonna have to send you guys pictures of this mare. You would not
believe. Oh, I think you've sent me pictures of her before. Yeah.
She looks like she ate every other thoroughbred at the racetrack.
The Majestic Warriors are such nice horses.
Majestic Warrior was owned by Donnie Brown, who's Ruby Blue's old owner. So I talked to Donnie Brown about Majestic Warrior at length. I was like, we have a mare. She's a beast. Her feet are like dinner plates. She's got the biggest, most correct legs. Just so much bone, and they're dead ass straight. Like, this is like the most classically built thoroughbred I've ever seen. She's 17-1. She's got a leg on each corner. Good luck knocking her over. There's no way. She's just classy. She jumps great. She's brave. I was like, Hillary, I want to breed her for me. Like, I love that mare. And her first foal, amazing. She's gorgeous.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Sign me up.
Getting back a little bit to the RRP, let's talk about some expectations and your goals there. How has your journey lined up with your expectations so far?
I'm one of those people that I aggressively don't make goals necessarily, because I tend to get very tunnel visioned into specific goals, and then I lose sight of what's happening that maybe should make me change that. I don't have a lot of specific expectations. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, I want to go compete in this event and do this thing, and I want him to do this by this date. You're not going to hear that from me. I want to be really open to what the horse wants and needs. I want to be respectful of his learning pace. I want to be respectful of what he's mentally and physically comfortable with. I have the luxury of doing that. I don't feel a lot of pressure about it. I just want the horse to be successful, and I want the horse to be happy. So I don't have a lot of expectations. That might make a terrible person.
No, I'm the same way.
No, I think that's really insightful. It's been so cool to get to talk to, we had four trainers last year, and now we've got four new trainers this year. And just, it's really fascinating how each trainer, like, their mental process going through this and getting to talk through that. And some people, they know what discipline they're doing and that's how it's going to be. Yeah. And they're very much in that. And then others are like, we'll see when we get there kind of thing. Yeah. And I know you have to choose your discipline before you get there, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's just so interesting. And I really like that, because I do agree that it's neat that you know that about yourself, basically, that if you have a goal, you might ignore other signs that maybe you're on the wrong path.
Yeah. So it's something I've learned about myself over time, because even in blogging at the beginning of every year, it used to be a thing. All the bloggers would be like, here's my goals for the year. And they were very specific. And they tell you, they feed you this bullshit about smart goals, measurable, specific, blah, blah, blah. That's great. I can't handle that as a human. I will go so hard that I will kill myself to accomplish this thing that I wrote on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
That at the end of the day doesn't mean shit. At the end, the priority is the horse, how he's doing, how I'm feeling about it. Are we doing something that's good or not? And that's what I want to keep the priority. And I have to go into it being very fluid, I think.
Yeah.
Because I do feel this horse doesn't owe anyone anything. And that is the most important thing to me. If we get 4 months down the road and he's like, I'm not ready, great. I'm not going to put the pressure on him. I think he's fantastic, but if he's not ready, we're not going to do it. If he is, we will. I hope he is. I think we're on the right track for that. That is the goal, but I'm not going to sit here and say that if we don't make it, I'm going to feel like it's a failure. No, I feel like as long as I'm continuing to make the right choice for the horse, that's what this is about. It's the journey. The goal is the makeover, but it's not. Does that make sense?
The goal should be to produce a really nice horse, right?
Yes. Yes.
That's I think, the original intent of the makeover, to showcase the versatility of the breed, but also the training and the things that they can accomplish.
Yes.
So I think that's awesome.
I drive my poor trainer. She, at the beginning of the season, she's like, oh, what's your goal for the season? And I was like, oh no, you don't want to ask me this question. It will start me down.
I'll skip the second goals question.
I will dodge that question 1,000 times over, because I can't do it. And the other thing is, I'm very competitive with myself, and I don't handle feeling like I failed very well. I feel very disappointed about it. And if there's not a reason to set myself up for that, I just don't feel, I don't see the need.
Yeah.
Like, I just don't.
Sure.
Yeah. One of our other RRP trainers, we asked her what her methodology was when it came to training, and she called it
flexible consistency.
And I thought that was really brilliant. I was like, you know
That's exactly it. To me, that's exactly it. It's a horse. You got to be willing to pivot.
Yeah. Constantly. And that could be on the daily.
Yeah. Every day. You're like, what next? What's the best choice here?
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of milestones, et cetera, has Rubes been off the property yet or had any firsts that you're especially proud of?
Oh, he's been off the property.
I know you've shared a couple of very behind the scenes videos and excerpts with me.
Here's the thing. He's just really down to party. He thinks if he's going somewhere, it's for a reason. And he is there and he's shown up and he's doing the thing at 125%. The problem is, I just need him to chill the fuck out. He's got to learn, before he can do anything, he's got to learn to take a deep breath and just relax. And he's still learning that off property. On the property, he could probably go do a starter tomorrow. He's brilliant. Off the property, he thinks literally everything is his business. Everything he should be involved in should be done at mock speed. And that I am not really that important to any of the things that he has on his list of priorities. So he's been off the property.
So he has goals.
He has goals. I'm not sure that he can name them.
He's a Hall of Famer over here, guys. I don't know if you know me, but
you don't win that much money and race that long without
having an ego,
having some go get 'em, right? Yeah, so that's not ever going to be his problem. Yeah. Slowing down his brain and his feet are the challenges for him. He's been off property twice. The first time we learned what not to do. The second time was much better. He has to move his feet all the time right now when he's off property. If his feet stop moving, his hamsters fall off the wheels and he goes straight up in the air and does a little interpretive dance that nobody really likes.
Oh boy.
So he's having to learn that he can stop and take a breath in between the moving of the feet. So that's where he's at right now with off property. I have not gotten on him off property yet because he's not there yet. Yeah. He's got to be present. He's not quite present.
Gotcha.
So he'll go again tomorrow. Luckily, this is Ocala. I can drive 5 minutes down the road and be somewhere.
Yeah.
So he'll go tomorrow and we'll just do the same thing again. We did a lot of groundwork when he first got here. And he tries really hard. He's not being naughty. Yeah. This is not coming from a naughty place. It's coming from he goes 1,000 miles an hour and I just need him to not go 1,000 miles an hour.
Yeah.
So that's his most at home. This horse is brilliant. He's just got to figure out how to go off property and keep it together.
And it's really hard because obviously, especially with the ones that have raced a lot, but I found even with Oscar, the first couple times I took him anywhere and opened up the trailer and saw that he was just lathered in sweat, I was like,
yes.
Yes. And I was like, oh, he thinks we're doing something because he always shipped to race. And it's breaking that cycle of thought. It's tricky to be like, no, we're here just to... And I'm like, put your head down. Why is your head so high?
That's where he's at. Like, he comes off the trailer lathered, and he's head straight up in the air on a periscope, and he's looking for the racetrack, and I have to try to funnel that into something positive and calm.
Yeah, and that's just going to take mileage.
It's, and to be honest, he got a little bit backburnered during peak horse show season because I do have a horse that I was trying to move up to preliminary, and Ocala between February and April is literal insanity. So I couldn't get him a lot of places very often just because I literally ran out of time. Everything's calming down now. So he will start going places more. He's been in a consistent schedule at home, but getting him off property has been more difficult. So that's his next big thing is I just have to start taking him a lot until he can figure out that it's different there too.
Yeah. And sorry, buddy, you're retired. Yeah.
You also strike me as the kind of rider that might feel a bit more comfortable if you could actually climb on him and just say, look, we're all right. Cause I know you can tolerate a lot of silliness under saddle.
Yes. So. I think the thing with him is he's really okay until he bubbles over and then he explodes.
You kind of lose him. Yeah.
And like I said, it's not malicious. It's not bad, but when he explodes, he just literally can't anymore.
Yeah.
And he has to move his body in a very kind of explosively violent way. So I'm not super keen to get on him until he can control that, or we can find a way to funnel it positively, because I do have to consider the fact that I have another horse I'm trying to compete very seriously. And if I get hurt on this one for something stupid and avoidable, that was a bad decision on my part, I'm going to be really mad at myself.
Just because you rushed or were just like, I'm just going to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. Like, and I feel like if I did come off of him or something in that environment, now I would just have a way bigger problem.
A massive setback, like, for sure.
Massive. Yeah. As much as I love to just get straight on one and figure it out, because nothing really bothers me. It doesn't, it's fine. I just don't, when your spidey senses is like, that's just, let's just not, like, that's probably not in our best interest and it's not going to end well. We need to wait until he can learn to regulate some of this a little bit more.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I need to see a little bit more, like, the hamsters, they can go fast, but they need to stay on the wheel. So,
not just we'll go, see.
Yes.
You've got a lot of readers and followers who are fellow adult amateurs, and we have a lot of listeners who are adult ammies. And what advice would you give to someone that's thinking about taking on their very first off-track thoroughbred?
I feel like you should have some thoroughbred experience before you just go buy one. Like if you can ride some, preferably maybe start on ones that have been off the track for a while and then work your way to more recent, or put yourself in a position with someone that does know thoroughbreds really well, whether that's a trainer or a friend, or there's a lot of people out there willing to help. If you have a thoroughbred, if you have a reseller nearby and you're like, I would love to learn more about this, I guarantee you they're going to help you.
Yeah.
I wouldn't just be like, I've always ridden born bloods, or I've always ridden quarter horses. What could be different? They're great horses, but you have to understand how their brains work and put yourself in a good position. And if you're going to go buy one, work with someone that you feel has a really good reputation and is honest, because these people know the horses on the track and they can tell you which ones would be good for a first timer and which ones might not be. Because they are all very different. The one I had last year, literally a grandma's freaking monkey could have gotten on that thing and trotted it around the field like day two. I literally sold him to an adult amateur for her first horse, like an older lady. I would not have done that with 99% of them.
Right? He seemed incredibly straightforward and like a really
he
good
was. He had no thoughts, only vibes. I don't know how he won a stakes race, but he did. He was just dead ass quiet. Perfect horse for her. Lovely. I wouldn't have known that buying him straight off the track. They were like, oh yeah, he's quiet. No, they were serious. Mm-hmm. He was really quiet. I would look for trusted people before you buy and really take into consideration what they say and be very brutally honest with yourself for what you're able to deal with and what you aren't. Because if you're the kind of person that has 3 evenings a week to dedicate to this, you need a very different type of horse than the amateur that has 6 days a week, multiple hours a day to deal with. And depending on your background, how much experience you have with a thoroughbred, don't set yourself up for failure with any horse.
Yeah.
But especially not one off the track. That's not fair to anybody.
Yeah, I think that's some great advice.
Yeah, definitely. What about first-time makeover trainers? Anything that you've learned that you wish you knew on day one?
Read the rule book.
Yeah.
I live in perpetual fear, eventing, and literally my biggest fear is going to jail, if that tells you anything.
I always feel like I'm in trouble, so I'm like very careful.
Yeah, I loathe rules. I loathe authority, but I have a deep respect for not attracting their attention.
Yeah.
So I always feel very like I have to know the rules. I have to know what's going on. Yeah. And if I don't know the rule, I kind of panic.
Yeah. That's good advice, because they also changed a lot of rules this year. People didn't look at them until after they sent in their applications and they were like, hey, just friendly reminder.
I have all of the dates outlined. I literally read the rule book. I'm probably the only idiot that
as well.
Sat down. Yeah.
Like, honestly, this is how dorky I am. I was like, I want to print this out. I have to page through it. I don't want to look at it.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah, I know. I luckily come from a competitive background. So the horse show aspect of it very familiar to me. If you don't come from a horse show background, I could see it being more daunting. But for me, it's just, for me to be comfortable, I have to know the rules. So I've attended every webinar thing, and it just makes me feel better. Yeah. And then I feel like I'm not constantly wondering if I'm doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Right. But I've also watched a lot in the past. Like, I've always kept up with makeover stuff throughout the years. So it's not as new.
And there's so many resources as well in their site. And just, if you just Google or look on YouTube or whatever for different videos of the different disciplines and what to expect and things like that.
Yeah. I think you can know as much as you want to know.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's great. Really.
So I have a crazy question. How do you make sure that this stays fun, even when the progress isn't linear or life gets busy?
I'm an idiot. I can make anything fun. This is what I was talking about. What I have learned from blogging is, like, I used to have a really hard time. Like, I'm my own worst critic. I'm very nitpicky. I'm not a perfectionist, except when it comes to horses. And my expectations for myself are ridiculously high, unrealistically high. And I struggled for a very long time, and I got so much anxiety from it that I actually found myself showing up at a horse show and I was like, I hate this. This isn't fun. I don't know where I've lost this along the way, but, like, I've completely lost sight of the point. I'm upset about dumb shit. I'm not enjoying my horse the way I should be. And I just had this real epiphany moment where I was like, I just realized it wasn't fun. And I was like, I have to change this.
Yeah.
And I know it's coming from my brain. Like, I'm the one doing this to me. So I need to figure out how to change this, because this is a me problem.
Yeah.
It's a brain problem. And it took me a long time. It really did. Because you're having to reprogram your brain computer.
Yeah.
And I still have to consciously sometimes go, I'm being a bitch to myself. I need to step back and take a bigger picture look at this. Literally all the time I have to do that to myself. After horse shows that don't go well, I'm upset because I did something stupid. Obviously, everybody's going to do something stupid. I carry it for days. And I'm just like, why am I doing this to myself?
Yeah.
This has to be fun. I'm not a professional. I take it very seriously. I'm very committed to this. I work very hard. But everybody's going to make mistakes. I have to be able to have the mental fortitude to say, that's a mistake. It's not who I am.
Yeah.
And that's going to be part of the journey. And if I can't find joy in the process, and if I can't remember that this is supposed to be fun, I shouldn't be on a horse, because I'm not bringing my best self to that horse. And I'm not going to make the best decisions for that horse if I'm constantly thinking that I have to do this thing or I have to achieve this thing.
Yeah.
And it's honestly, since I moved to Ocala, it took some of the pressure away a little bit. Like, I could go to more horse shows and people don't know me as much here. It gave me a chance to go, you've been working on your brain. Let's put it into action and be a freaking adult and have a little bit more perseverance. I just have to be mentally tougher, because I thought I was so mentally tough because I was tough on myself, but that's not, mental toughness is.
Yeah.
Mental toughness is resilience and being able to step back and say, this is a process. I have to understand that. I'm going to find the good and I'm going to go with that.
Yeah. And having that actual moment of self-reflection, introspection, that ability to be able to actually slow yourself down enough to say you can be physically strong enough to do the job and compete and everything. But mental fortitude is not just about calming your nerves. It's about, like you say, learning how to live in the moment and enjoy the moment and not just be getting through moment to an end goal or for a competition result or whatever the case might be.
Yeah. Right. I just constantly have to be like, what a privilege it is to go to a horse show and have a bad day.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there's that saying that pressure is privilege. And I think that's a thing that I think resonates with everybody and can apply to every rider in terms of wanting to be a little bit better than you were the day before.
Yeah. And competition is important to me and being better is important to me, but nothing is more important to me than the horses.
Yeah.
And if I can't at the end of the day go, that wasn't a great day, but this is still a great word learning. We're going to try again tomorrow and we're going to put this behind us. If I can't do that, that's a problem. that's something, and it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's not, it's, I would love to tell you that's just my brain. It's not.
No, you have to make it. It has to be part of like a little mantra that you're doing with yourself all the time to remember to take that time. You know,
it does not come naturally to me.
Yeah.
I'm very hard on myself and I relive. I could have 25 good jumps and the 26th bad one is the one that lives in my brain. And I have to consciously go, I'm going to push that out.
Yeah.
I have to file that away and remember what those 25 felt like.
The good news is you have a lot of really annoyingly good jump photos to look.
Last horse show, I had about 27 bad jumps and 3 good ones. So if that makes you feel any better. And that was the end of the day where I was just standing there and I was like, the good news is the me of 2 years ago would have been freaking ecstatic that I just ran around a prelim on my homebred and a couple things went sideways, but we're in one piece. He's happy. We have all the systems in place that we need to fix what went wrong today. The horse is happy and healthy. I learned something.
Yeah.
It's not actually a bad day.
Yeah. That's awesome. You know,
it's hard. It's that for me is that's the hardest part. It doesn't come naturally to me, but making the choice and like acknowledging when your brain's going down a bad path is for me, it's been key because I wouldn't be able to do this if it wasn't fun. This is hard. Like,
yeah,
it's hard. It's physically hard. It's mentally hard. It's financially hard. It's emotionally hard. It's long days. It's sweating. It's blood. It's tears. It's frustration. If you can't,
this isn't sounding very fun.
I know, Amanda.
It's hard. Like it is.
It sounds a little bit like MMA fighting right now.
I mean, I work on a breeding farm too. So like I've got fingers broken by baby horses and just there's something wrong with me every day and I'm still happy about it.
Yeah.
Like baby horse broke my finger. I was playing with a baby horse. How bad could it be?
Exactly.
It's very easy, I think, to lose track of the reason we started.
Yeah.
In all of the hard. 100%. But you have to find a way to recenter your brain and remember, I do this because I love it and I love the horses and that's what's most important.
I think that's one of the things we find the most fun about doing this is like learning everybody's origin story and figuring out what is this common thread that keeps us all together. And really, it's just these four-legged creatures that it's the one thing we all have in common and we just can't seem to stay away from. And I don't know. I just love it. But
I was sitting on Henry this morning on this beautiful Tuesday morning at 9:30, sitting on this horse that I bought for $900 off of Facebook that took me to preliminary. And now he's 18. He's just standing in a field being happy. And I was like, this is why we do it. This is like my 8-year-old self.
That's what I was like to think about. What would my like childhood version of myself think? I rode Gem on the beach last week and I was just like, and I've ridden other horses on the beach, but there was something really special about doing it with him and just being like, this is going to just be one of the top best moments of my life. It's just so special to me.
Even the bad moments aren't that bad.
Yeah, exactly. Amanda, this has been super fun. Obviously, I think the three of us could talk for hours and we're thrilled to follow along with your journey this year. Where can people find you online and keep up with your makeover journey?
So my blog is breedrideevent.com. My Instagram is breedrideevent, all one word. You'll see a lot in my stories. I post a lot in my stories, not as much on my page.
Perfect.
And then Ruby Blue has his own Facebook page. So just Ruby, one word, Blue, B-E-B-L-E-U, Ruby Blue. And I post some stuff there too. So you can follow him any of those places. He's a character. He's entertaining. So awesome. He'll be funny to follow.
And do you have any nonprofit or cause that you'd like to highlight while you're here?
I love old friends. I don't know if you guys saw that TikTok with Silver Charm and the man that, oh my God, it was so cute. I'm going to have to send it to you. They were frolicking through the field together.
Oh my
God. And I was like, yes, all of my available money here. continue to frolic in the field.
You love it.
Any thoroughbred charity is obviously the 501c, check it out. But any thoroughbred charity is great for me. There's a lot of people doing a lot of good things for thoroughbreds, and any way we can support them is fantastic.
Awesome. Thank you again for joining us. And for everybody listening, don't forget our next spotlight features Chelsea O'Brien, a returning RRP trainer and ambassador for Pastured Place. If you enjoyed today's episode, we'd love it if you left us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Facebook. And don't forget, if you leave a review, we'll send you some OTTB on tap stickers as a thank you. You can connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, or TikTok and get in touch with us. Get in touch with interview suggestions or episode ideas anytime at OTTBOnTap.com. And if you want more from bonus episodes and videos to our Evaluate series and private insiders group, head to OTTBOnTap.supercast.com to join. We love hearing from you. Cheers.
Cheers.